This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Daniel has been a good public servant to the kings who kept him in exile. As a new kingdom rises, Daniel has a disturbing vision about the future of his people. How can we trust God in the middle of dark and trying times like Daniel does? Well, today, Pastor Sam Horn will continue a sermon titled, He Knows the Future, from Daniel chapter 8. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
By the time we get to the end of this vision, there has been stunning good news that Daniel has received. Because as you read the vision, at the end of the vision, there is a temple that is being rededicated. There are sacrifices that are being offered again. God's people are back in a land from which they had been expelled. I mean, remember where Daniel is. He is in Babylon at the end of the first kingdom. And during this period of time, King Nebuchadnezzar tore down the temple. He burned Jerusalem and he took all of the people in Jerusalem captive and he brought them to Babylon. And as we open Daniel 8, they're still there. The temple is still down, the city is still burned, and the people are still in Babylon. But Daniel sees a vision of a time when there's a new temple being rededicated, there are sacrifices being offered again, and the people that belong to him that are captive in Babylon are back in the land. So somewhere between Daniel's time and the end of chapter 8, God's people are brought back into Israel, the city of Jerusalem is rebuilt, and the temple is reestablished. That is amazing good news for Daniel. And by the way, did that happen? And the answer is yes. Cyrus the Great issued a decree. Daniel may have actually written the text of that decree. And he permitted God's people to go back to the land. And he empowered a man named Nehemiah and later a man named Ezra. And when they got there, they rebuilt Jerusalem and they reestablished the worship of God and they rebuilt and consecrated the temple of God. And you can read all about it in books like Nehemiah and Ezra. It's a stunning fulfillment of what we're reading about way back here in Daniel's day as he looks forward to something that God predicted. He can hardly believe what he's hearing. There's going to be a temple again. There's going to be sacrifices again. The people are going to be brought into the land again. So there is stunning good news in this vision, but there is also deeply disturbing news. Because as Daniel receives the vision, he realizes that there are some things that are going to happen in this land. There's an arrogant ruler, very much like Nebuchadnezzar was at first, who's going to come into the land again. He's going to destroy God's people again. He's going to cast truth down to the ground again. He's going to prohibit the sacrifice and the worship of God. And he's going to do something so abominable in the temple that it is going to make the temple desolate again. And that's what Daniel didn't expect. God, I thought our 70-year captivity was it. I thought we were supposed to go back. I mean, Jeremiah said that we were going back, we were going to have a new temple, we were going to have a new land, we were going to have a new city, Messiah was going to come, and it was going to be awesome. And instead, what he sees, new temple, back in the land, rebuilt city, and at the end of the third kingdom, there is this arrogant ruler who comes in and he does astonishing, abominable things in the land, in the city, to the people, and even in the temple. And Daniel's trying to figure all of this out. And so that's the setting, that's the circumstance. And you and I have to do the same thing that Daniel did. We have to orient ourselves in terms of where we are in this vision. Daniel was at the end of Kingdom 1 and in the beginning of Kingdom 2, and he's looking primarily at events in this chapter that are going to happen in Kingdom 3. When we orient ourselves, we have to go all the way through Kingdom 2. Persia is gone, rose and went. We have to go all the way through the kingdom of Greece. That already happened. And we have to go all the way through the beginning of the fourth kingdom. So here we are somewhere after the beginning of the fourth kingdom and what is yet to come at the end of the fourth kingdom. So here we are. And one of the reasons we need to know what happened there is because as we look forward to what God said is going to happen here, we are in the same position Daniel was way back there when he was looking forward to the things that are going to happen here that have already happened from our perspective. And that's what Jesus meant when he said, I told you some things so that when they happened, you would know and you would not fall away. And so that brings us really to the second thing about this vision. If we could change the camera lens and get it to point now to the sort of wide angle idea, we're going to see how the vision actually unfolds. There is a course or a story that is being told, and it's told very simply, and I'll just move quickly through this because we've covered some of this before. It's told in four parts. There is a magnificent ram that shows up in verses 3 and goes all the way through verse 4. There's this massive ram. I raise my eyes and behold a ram. Look, Daniel says, a ram. And he's standing on the bank of the canal. He's here in the capital city of an empire that hasn't started yet. Susa ends up becoming the capital city of Cyrus's empire that hasn't started yet. So Daniel is looking forward and he sees this ram and it has two horns. One horn is higher than the other. And I saw the ram charging west and north and south, and no beast could stand before him. And then I want you to notice at the end of verse 4, there was no one who could rescue from his power. He did as he pleased, and he became great. Later on in the text, we find out exactly who this ram is. He is actually Cyrus the Great and the kingdom of Persia, and the kings of Persia that follow him. This kingdom had unstoppable military might. It became larger than the kingdom of Babylon. Under Cyrus, he had extraordinary military might and political acumen. And you might think that he succeeded because of his own strength. But interestingly enough, hundreds of years before Daniel lived, God had already called out Cyrus's name in the book of Isaiah. In the book of Isaiah, hundreds of years before Daniel was born, God said, I have anointed Cyrus, whose right hand I have grasped, to subdue nations before him, to loosen the belt of kings, to open doors before him, and gates that will not be closed. I, the Lord, the God of Israel, am he who called you by name. Wow. I mean, we're reading about Daniel at the end of the Babylonian Empire, and he's looking forward to this kingdom, and we're reading about a king who's going to come, and he's going to have unusual military success. He's going to establish one of the greatest kingdoms in the ancient world, a worldwide empire. And hundreds of years before Daniel even saw this, God had already called out the name of this king, Cyrus. And you can read about it in Isaiah chapter 45 if you're interested. And so that's exactly what happens. There is no one who can deliver Babylon from the power and the might of this ram. But you know what? The ram only gets a few verses of attention. The story moves very quickly to an angry male goat. And you can see this, can't you, in verse 5 and going really all the way down to verse 7. As I was beholding, a male goat came from the west across the face of the whole earth without touching the ground. I mean, there's speed here. And the goat had a conspicuous horn between his eyes. He came at the ram that had the two horns standing at the bank of the canal, and he ran against it in powerful wrath. He was enraged at the ram, verse 7. He struck the ram. He broke the two horns and the ram had no ability, no power to stand before him. And he cast him down to the ground and he trampled on him, and there was no one who could rescue the ram. Just like there was nobody who could rescue Babylon from the might of Cyrus, there was nobody who could rescue Cyrus's kingdom from the wrath and the anger of the man who started the Greek Empire. And he's described as a conspicuous horn, and everybody agrees that this person who's described this way is a man you know from history very well. Alexander the what? The Great. And this kingdom starts in 331 BC and it goes to 146 BC. But for the first 10 years of that kingdom, that is where all of its strength, all of its might, and all of its expansion happened. It happens with blinding speed because of an individual young political ruler who has some kind of genius that makes him conquer the world. And you know him as Alexander the Great. But at the height of his power, I mean right when everything is exactly where he wants it, at the height of his power, the great horn is broken. And that's exactly what happened to Alexander the Great at the height of his power. 10 years in, he dies unexpectedly. After living only 33 years, his military accomplishments, his achievement of spreading Greek culture and Greek language throughout the world of his day are still present and evident with us today. This was an astonishing kingdom. So what happens after this king dies? What happens in the third kingdom that nobody could stand against? What happens in that third kingdom when the first king, the powerful king that establishes everything, Alexander the Great, what happens when he dies? And the text says there are four mighty horns that come up. Look at what you see in verse 8. Then the goat became exceedingly great, but when he was strong, the great horn was broken. There's the death of Alexander the Great. And instead of it, or in its place, came up four conspicuous, large, majestic horns toward the four winds of heaven. And by the way, that's exactly what happened. If you look back on history, when Alexander the Great died in 323 BC, he had no heir. And so the kingdom was divided among his four generals. You remember back in Daniel 7, we talked about a leopard that had four heads? Here is the kingdom of Greece that was described as a leopard, and now it has four rulers. There are four sort of sub-kingdoms that make up this empire. And two of them matter for the sake of our vision. One of them was a general named Ptolemy, and he took Egypt, and he took Judah. And the other was a man named Seleucus. And he took Asia Minor, and he took Babylon and Persia. And then there was Cassander and Lysimachus, who took the other parts of the kingdom. But the two that matter that we're going to meet again in Daniel are Ptolemy and Seleucus, the Seleucid kingdom and the Ptolemy kingdom. And they're predicted right here in the text. And these two kingdoms, kings that come from these two kingdoms, are going to constantly be at war with each other. And the reason that is important, because if one kingdom wanted to get to the other kingdom with his army, he had to march through a middle ground. And the middle ground between these two kingdoms was a beautiful, glorious land called Israel. And if you've ever been to Israel, you know that if you want to get to Egypt from anywhere, you've got to go through Israel. And if you want to get from Egypt to anywhere, you've got to go through Israel. And so these two kingdoms that are being mentioned here in passing in Daniel chapter 8 actually came about. And here's the point I want to make again to us. What Daniel is looking at that is still future, we stand over here from our location and we look back and it's what? It's history. when Daniel was way back at the end of the first kingdom, looking forward, none of this had happened yet. When we look back, most of it has happened. And so Daniel is looking forward to prophecy. We are looking back on fulfillment. You say, why does that matter? Because the God who told Daniel the future didn't just tell Daniel the future because he knew it. He told Daniel the future because he planned it. He orchestrated it. Well, that brings us to the focal point. I mean, we've looked at the ram, so there's our wide-angle lens, and the ram gets tumbled down by this angry goat. There's a little bit of a narrower view, the kingdom of Greece, and then all of a sudden it gets really narrow. There are four small kingdoms that now rise up, and now we're going to get really narrow, and we're going to come to one of those kingdoms. Remember I told you there were two that mattered? There's the kings of Egypt, the Ptolemies, and then there's the king that took over Babylon and Persia, and that was the Seleucid king, and we're going to look at his kingdom. The rest of the vision is about that kingdom and that third empire. Remember the third empire, Greece, subdivides into four little kingdoms, and now we're looking at one of those kingdoms, the Seleucid kingdom, and we're actually going to zero in on that kingdom, and we're going to go way down into that kingdom to one of its kings. So what we did is we started out with this wide angle. It got narrower, and by the time we get halfway through the vision, we are looking all the way down in this little kingdom that makes up the larger kingdom of Greece, and we're looking at one king. And we don't know his name yet, but we do know this. He is described as a wicked little horn. Look at verse 9. Out of those four kingdoms, out of those four rulers, out of one of them comes a little horn. And he grew exceedingly great toward the south and toward the east and toward the glorious land. And in verse 10, it grew great even to the host of heaven. And some of the host and some of the stars it threw down to the ground and trampled on them. And by the way, let's just stop there and remember something. You remember back in Genesis 15, God told Abraham, I'm going to give you descendants, and they're going to be as numerous as what? The stars of heaven. Israel and the people of Israel are sometimes referred to in the Bible as God's stars. Israel, in different places in your Bible, is described as God's host. The word host is the word for army. The Israelites were God's stars and God's army, and this king, this little arrogant tyrant of a ruler that we're looking in on, is going to come against God's stars and God's army, and for a time, he is going to have victory over them. He is going to cast them down. He is going to trample on them. In verse 11, this arrogant ruler is going to become great. He's going to exalt himself even as the prince of that army. Who is the prince of the army of Israel? And the answer is God. This arrogant little ruler from that tiny little kingdom in Greece is going to make himself equal to God. And for a time, he's going to come into that beautiful land that belongs to God, and he's going to tear down God's stars, and he's going to trample down God's army, God's people. And he's going to do more than that. The regular burnt offering was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary was overthrown. And the army will be given over to it with the burnt offering because of transgression. And this ruler will throw truth to the ground, and he will prosper. I mean, this is really stunning. Here's this little arrogant ruler in the third kingdom. And he rises up and he starts acting aggressively to everybody. He is unstoppable. He has great power and great might. And he comes against God's people, God's stars, and he tramples them down. He destroys them. He exalts himself to be equal with their leader, God. He takes away the sacrifices of God and he defiles the temple of God. And Daniel wants to know why. And God says, well, let me tell you why, Daniel. All of this is happening because of transgressions. All of this is happening because of transgressions. Look at verse 12. The army of God, the host, will be given over to this ruler along with the burnt offering because of transgression. Wait a second. Whose transgression are we talking about that brought all of this renewed persecution and devastation against God's people? Whose transgression? And if you've been following along the storyline, it's Israel's ongoing transgression. Why are they in Babylon? We went all the way back to chapter 1. Why did God give the people of Israel into Nebuchadnezzar's hand? Why did he give the temple vessels into Nebuchadnezzar's hand? Why did he let Nebuchadnezzar destroy Jerusalem and destroy the temple? And the answer is because of the rebellion and the sin of his people. And God disciplined them. What did the writer of Hebrews say? Despise not the chastening of the Lord. Here, God is chastening his people for 70 years. We've been looking at four faithful men who in those 70 years stood for God, were faithful to God. They refused to eat food offered to idols. They refused to bow down to a graven image. They refused to pray to anybody other than God, and they paid a horrific price for it, but God preserved them. But that's four of God's faithful people. What about the rest of them? The book of Jeremiah describes what went on in those 7 years. God's people became even more rebellious. They became even more angry at God. Well, if you're going to take away our temple, and you're going to take away our city, and you're going to take away our people, why should we keep serving you? Jeremiah, stop talking to us about repenting. Stop talking to us about worshiping a God who did this to us. And they literally at one point say to Jeremiah, Jeremiah, we are sick of you keep talking about God. We are done with the God who treated us this way. They actually say this in the book of Jeremiah. We had it better when we were worshiping the queen of heaven. That's the moon. We had it better when we were worshiping the moon. And so you know what, Jeremiah? You just stop. We've already talked to our wives, and they're going to start baking the cakes we used to offer to the moon goddess, and we're going back to that worship. This is after the 70 years of captivity. You say, well, what about when they went back into the land? Well, read the prophet Haggai and read the prophet Malachi, and you're going to find out that even after Daniel's day, when these people go back to the land, they continue to sin against God. And God says to Daniel, let me tell you why at the end of the third kingdom, this little arrogant tyrant is going to come up and he's going to have unusual success in the persecution of my people. You want to know why, Daniel? For the same reason I gave them into Nebuchadnezzar's hand.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message, or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.